The term land into trust has specific legal meaning and relates to the relationship American Indian and Alaska Native tribes have with the federal government. In Alaska, tribes were given the green light to submit applications to put land into trust 4 years ago, but that change was recently put on hold. What does that mean for Alaska tribes who have submitted applications, and what are the pros and cons of trust land status? We'll discuss the future of tribal land ownership on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Known as Indian Country in the lower 48, land into trust may be easier to define in states where there are reservations with borders. Why is land status different for Native people in Alaska? Why was there then a change to allow land holdings that could more closely mirror Indian Country here? And then why did it get put on hold? So many whys. Here to help answer some of these questions is Anna Crary. Anna is an attorney in the Anchorage office of Landy Bennett Blumstein. Anna works on tribal law issues with Alaska Native corporations and tribes. Yes, there is a distinction. Full disclosure, Landy Bennett Blumstein provides underwriting support for programming on Alaska Public Media. Hi, Anna.
Hello.
Thanks so much for being here. Also joining us today from the KUAC studios in Fairbanks. I don't know what's going on with me today. Already starting off. From the KUAC studios in Fairbanks is attorney Mike Wallery. Mike has been practicing law for nearly 40 years and spent 20 of them as legal counsel for the Tanana Chiefs Conference. Hello, Mike.
Hello. Good morning.
You are also welcome to join our conversation today. Alaskans, do you support tribal self-determination? Do you have questions about what land into trust or Indian Country status means for tribes and other Alaskans? Do you worry that it will somehow lock up land and resources? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Anna, let's start with the current situation, and then we'll have Mike bring Mike in to examine some of the history of Alaska tribes and how this land designation first came to be an issue here. In 2014, the Interior Department Solicitor General reversed a rule that excluded Alaska tribes from the ability to apply to have lands taken into trust. Tribes were cleared to apply. Now that's on hold. The BIA is taking comment around the state. Anna, what does this mean? Why was the rule put on hold?
Well, that's a good question. So on June 29th, 2018, the solicitor issued an opinion notifying everyone that the DOI was withdrawing a previously issued solicitor opinion published in January 2017 that supported the secretary's authority to place tribal land or to place land into trust here in Alaska. The current solicitor concluded that in 2017 the then solicitor hadn't sufficiently considered the effect that certain laws, both ANCSA, but laws then enacted after ANCSA, specifically ANILCA and FLTMA, so the Federal Land Policy Management Act, and then the Alaska Native, Alaska National Land Claims Act, had on the ability of the secretary to place land into trust. And so it came as a surprise, but also not really a surprise to many practitioners in Indian Country, given that in the lower 48, the Department of Interior, BIA, has already initiated a review of land into trust regulations specifically for off-reservation applications. So to lay the foundation for what this process is, tribes have to own land They have to own it in fee simple. And then they ask the Interior Department to place that land into trust. There are on-reservation applications and then off-reservation applications. Here in Alaska, any sort of land into trust application happens under the off-reservation regulations. So,
and so are you saying that the land into trust applications for land into trust are being reviewed in the lower 48 as well as in Alaska?
So the regulations for off-reservation applications are being reviewed.
Interesting.
And so what the Department of Interior is proposing to do is essentially bifurcate the existing regulation to have a off-reservation application process that considers land into trust applications that intends to put land into trust for gaming purposes, and then all other applications for off-reservation trust acquisitions.
So there's a particular carve-out for applications that are related to gaming.
Yes, or the proposed rule has that in it. It would have that in it.
Okay, there has been one application granted for the Craig Tribal Association on Prince of Wales Island. What does this status change mean for the tribe's authority and for the city of Craig?
So when land is placed into trust, it is subject to a different regulatory scheme than, you know, state lands, essentially. So when the federal government holds land in trust, that land becomes Indian country, which is sort of a term of art, you know, which is specific, you know, to land into trust. It withdraws that land from the taxation authority of certain municipalities. So the 1.08-acre parcel that the Craig Tribal Association successfully placed into trust is no longer subject to municipal taxes. In the lower 48, as it would be in Alaska, land that's placed into trust is subject to civil regulatory jurisdiction by the tribe, and then also certain federal regulations and jurisdiction extensions would apply to Indian country. So I imagine that the Craig Tribal Council, like I said, is no longer paying taxes for that 1.08 acre parcel to either it would be the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, I think, up there. They're probably exempt from whatever city municipal taxes they were paying before. And so it's my understanding that the property that they successfully placed into trust just contains their tribal offices. So, you know, it's not, you know, when people think of land into trust, in the lower 48, I think that, you know, we think of like expansive reservations, like, you know, reservations in Wyoming or reservations in Montana, where there's certain fish and game tribal regulation that takes place, where there's, you know, expansive tribal, criminal jurisdiction over tribal members. It's hard to imagine those sort of applications of tribal authority being exerted on a 1.08 acre parcel of land where a tribal building, you know, administrative building sits. But it's certainly possible now, theoretically, that land has been placed into trust.
And it does take it out of local tax rolls, which is, of course, a concern for municipalities about what this could mean in the future. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk more about what that means with zoning and insurance and other things. But first, let's bring Mike Wallery in here. Mike, you have a long tenure with tribal law. Give us the backstory on land into trust before the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. There were some reservations here before ANCSA. There's only one now, Metlakatla. What was the land status story for Alaska Natives before ANCSA?
Well, the history of it goes back quite a ways. Alaska, when it came into basically under the Treaty of Session, a lot of people didn't know what to do with the Alaska Native people and the communities that were here in terms of the people in Washington, D.C. A number of commissions were formed back in the day and tried to figure that out, and no consistent policy ever came forward. In the early 1900s, the federal government started realizing that the influx of non-Native population was threatening the Native population, and they started setting up reserves to foster reindeer husbandry, all of that kind of thing. Sometimes they called them educational reserves. But during the New Deal, the Roosevelt administration, Congress at the time, came up with an idea of let's have a consistent policy for Indians, and enacted the Indian Reorganization Act, which was intended to reform Native tribal governments that had been very ineffective, and established rules for land tenure in Native communities and reservations. That was extended to Alaska because the question was what to do in a state that had no reservation or an area that had no reservations, because we were still a territory at the time. And so in 1938, Congress extended the terms of the Alaska or the Indian Reorganization Act to Alaska, which allowed tribes who had reserves to elect to turn them into reservations, Indian reservations, with land into trust. And it also authorized the secretary to take land into trust and to establish reservations. Those are actually two separate terms. Land, there can be land that is in trust status or restricted status that is not, in fact, a reservation. And those separate authorities were contained within the Alaska Extension. And so a couple of reservations were formed here in Alaska under the Indian Reorganization Act. The biggest one, Arctic Village or Venati Reserve.
Right.
Congress, it was a proposal for a reservation down in Haines, created a great deal of opposition. In the meantime, a number of IRA tribal governments were formed throughout the state in the 1940s. And in 1952, in opposition to the Haines reservation proposal, Congress expressed its displeasure for the policy, and the United States government, through executive action, suspended all actions of taking land into trust or creating reservations, really without any congressional oversight or action.
And was that nationwide or just in Alaska?
Just in Alaska. And reservations were, and land was taken into trust after 1952. In the lower 48, all the way, even to today, mm-hmm. land is being taken into trust. 1971, ANCSA terminated the reservations and reserves that had been formed earlier, taking all land out of trust with a couple of exceptions, Metlakatla being one, Chilkat
yes.
Indian Village being another. But there really had been no comprehensive review of the policy until 1978, when the solicitor issued an opinion saying that in Alaska, taking land into trust conflict with the policies of ANCSA in 1978. And then in 1980, the Interior created by regulation because prior to this, regulations had not governed the process. It was done on an incremental basis. Between 1978 and 1980, the Department of Interior adopted its first regulations about taking land into trust, and in 1980 created an Alaska exception into the regulations. However, there was one trust taking during this period in the village of Tulaita. And there was also an idea that you couldn't form IRA tribal governments, that villages that wanted to adopt IRA tribal governments couldn't. That went away in 1981 when the Village of Eagle organized as an IRA. And then in 2013, the Akyechuk litigation began. And the district court held that the Secretary of Interior did have the authority to take land into trust. as a matter of discretion. And in 2014, they adopted a rule that basically allowed it.
Yes. And let's go back to ANCSA, the Claims Settlement Act, Alaska Native mm-hmm. Claims Settlement Act. People who are either confused or don't like the idea of tribes in Alaska being able to take land into trust say ANCSA settled those land claims, that it was done, that Native people agreed to it, tribal jurisdiction wasn't part of the deal. People have characterized it as that there's a new generation of Native leaders that is coming forward and wants a different deal, and that's going back on what ANCSA put in place. What would you say to people who present that argument and feeling about what ANCSA was supposed to do?
Well, as with everything, all kinds of people can import all kinds of different ideas into what something is supposed to do. But from a legal standpoint, you kind of have to take a look at what the law says and what it doesn't say. For example, on hunting and fishing rights, which existed prior to ANCSA, those were extinguished. And Congress basically said that. What Congress did not address was what to do about tribes in the future and what to do about lands that were in trust or taking lands into trust and the ability of authority and the IRA itself. And Congress did not repeal the Indian Reorganization Act nor the Alaska provision or the provisions of federal law that extended the IRA to Alaska. And there was a proposal called 2C, it refers to a section in ANCSA, that said, we're going to study this. And Congress did all the way up into, all the way up into 2013 and has been studying the issue. And, for example, the Indian Law and Order Commission said, yeah, the authority to take land into trust exists. And that, it's probably got its benefits, and tribes should be able to have that too, unless Congress takes that power away. And here we have a situation where there is this proposal that the executive branch take the prerogatives and rights under the Indian Reorganization Act away without talking to Congress about it.
Let me remind folks that this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking today about land into trust status in Alaska being on hold. What does that mean for tribes and for other Alaskans? In the studio in Anchorage is Anna Crary. Anna works for Landy Bennett Blumstein and is a tribal law attorney. Mike Wallery is in the KUAC studios in Fairbanks. He is also an attorney that specializes in tribal law. You can join our conversation if you have questions or comments. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's take a question or a comment from a caller now. Julie is in Prince of Wales.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is in regards to these lands that are become land into trust. Those lands that may have been near municipalities and were previously contributing through taxes, when they, if and when they're transferred, what happens to things like law enforcement, fire, or other emergency services, which were contributing to them through taxes? Does them not being under that, does that cause any, does that raise any questions or concerns or conflicts? And also, just a general, broader question, I see how this can benefit tribal organizations, but how does this land into trust overall benefit taxpayers, the rest of the taxpaying population, as a whole? And I can take my answer or comments off the air, please.
All right, Julie, thanks. I did want to get to that question a little later in the conversation, but let's go to that now. Julie's question is about, okay, if tribes put property into trust, it takes it out of the tax rolls, how do they then, or do they not, contribute to local services that are in municipalities? What's the answer to that question?
Well, it's a good question, first of all. The circumstance of land being placed into trust here in Alaska is new. And like Alaska has always done, I think that there are a number of unique solutions that tribes, municipalities, and individuals can come to when it comes to the question of receipt of municipal services, that are funded by a tax, that are taxpayer funded, if land is not in a status that contributes to that tax roll. So I'd start off by, reiterating what I said before, and that there is one instance of land being taken into trust in Alaska.
But there could be more.
There could be more. Right now, there are three applications pending. None of the applications are, as I understand them, are over 3 acres. So, I think in terms of, like, if the question is, will there be less of a tax base for municipalities to draw from, the answer is yes. Is that a significant change to the municipality tax base? Right now, no. And I can't imagine that it would be. And the reason why I say that is because when land is put into trust, entities and individuals that either support that or that have concerns or that oppose that application have an opportunity to contribute comments and participate in that process and state what their opposition is.
Mike Wallery, you have said that the main reason, and we've been discussing that, to put land into trust is to keep it from being seized for taxes or other adverse mm-hmm. things. But you also said when you and I were talking a few days ago that the need for that is lost in Alaska. Why is that?
Well, if I could just address the first question. And that is that there are thousands of acres of trust and restricted land in Alaska, native allotments, and native townsite lots. We only have, as I understand it, three parcels other than, well, Metlakatlin, two other parcels of tribal trust lands. What we do know is this, is that in dealing with lands into trust, there's a solicitor's opinion. We're dealing with municipal services called the Eskimo Village opinion, which dealt with a group of native allotments that were established here in the city of Fairbanks. And the city of Fairbanks attempted to terminate, back in the day, water and sewer service into the community of Eskimo Village. And the federal government became very angry about that, and there was a long discussion about it. And there are legal prohibitions to terminating services to Indian communities. Now, on the other hand, what happened in that situation is that the Indian Health Service came in and provided financial assistance in the extension of water and sewer hookups into that community. So those are really not big concerns. As Anna says, there are ways to deal with it, and we've been doing it for a long time. In terms of the other question that you asked about things have changed. The sovereignty movement that emerged in the 1980s was primarily targeted at land protection. There were failing corporations. A number of multinational corporations were scouting ANCSA corporations for hostile takeover or buyout. And there was a real concern that the land claims benefits would be lost. But there have been major changes since that time. The ANCSA amendments, the so-called 1991 amendments, protected land status for much of the undeveloped Native corporation lands, protected Native control of the corporations through stock restrictions on alienation, and those types of things. The jurisdictional issues have changed, too, since that time. back in the early 1980s, there were people who were saying there were no tribes in Alaska, and of course that was proven to be quite wrong. And tribes have been clarifying their rights over the last 40 years. Probably the biggest one being Baker versus John, in which the authority, the personal jurisdiction of tribes, that is the ability to protect Native people in their communities, was confirmed. And of course, we have VAWA and a number of other laws which actually confirm the ability of tribes, despite the lack of Indian country or land into trust in any particular situation, to address issues of domestic violence, alcohol. We've seen tribal court orders entered to banish meth and opioid traffickers. And so a lot of the jurisdictional issues have also been addressed. There still remains, I believe, a need for land into trust to deal more with internally native issues, such as the potential for loss of land through what I call the failed corporations, the failed villages, where the corporation may have lapsed into because of the failure continue to register, and they have lapsed and they're not able to get back their corporate status in the same way that they had as an ANCSA corporation.
Interesting.
So there are real needs for land into trust to protect, but it has really very, very little to do with the non-tribal community. It has really more to do with providing land protections for communities that are at risk of losing their land. And many of the other issues, the jurisdictional issues, there's no financial advantage. You don't get more money from the BIA if you put your land into trust for housing or roads.
Because that's based on the people, not the land, correct? The funding formulas for federal dollars is more based on a tribe's population than its land base?
Most funding formulas are what do we call using a tribe pop formula. In other words, a certain allocation for the tribes and a certain allocation for the number of people in the tribe. And so those, what we call a tribe pops. Roads are based, road allocations are based upon the amount of roads that you have in your tribal transportation plan. Water and sewer is based upon a different formula again. So housing, again, a different formula, but somewhat like the tribe pop formulas. So having land into trust is really not a factor in any of those funding allocation schemes.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue on this discussion about what land into trust means in Alaska, how that may change in the future. It's on hold right now. The ability for tribes to apply to have lands placed into trust is on hold, currently pending federal review. We will continue this conversation and take your calls and questions as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing the issue of land into trust, known as Indian Country. Tribes in Alaska were, a rule was reversed in 2014 saying that they could apply to have lands placed in trust here in Alaska. That is now on hold for federal review. When we talk about land into trust, and I should also say that Anna Crary is in the Anchorage studio with me. She is an attorney with Landy Bennett Blumstein, and on the ISDN line from KUAC in Fairbanks is Mike Wallery, also an attorney who specializes in tribal law. When we talk about land into trust and the concern that people have that are outside of tribal communities about it being taken out of the tax rolls and what that could mean in the future, the reason for that is because it's an issue of sovereignty. Is that correct? And how would you describe what that means, Anna? Sovereignty seems to be kind of at the center of this discussion over tribal government authority and the direct relationship that tribes have with the federal government. So what does that mean? What is sovereignty? How would you define it?
Well, that's a loaded question. I think it, you know, when I, the concept of sovereignty, as I understand it and as I sort of look at it with relation to tribes, is, you know, really recognition of your, on the one hand, recognition of your status, recognition that you are, you know, a discrete governmental entity. Being able, having sovereignty, you know, I think is being able to, you know, govern your people, you know, manage your lands, govern your lands, like sort of, you know, control what is important to you and what happens to you, and, you know, protect what is yours. You know, I think I could go on for a long time talking about, you know, the history of the term sovereignty, you know, whatnot. But, you know, I think I'm thinking about the question that was asked earlier about the you know, effect on the withdrawal of land from, you know, the municipal tax roll. And I think it's really important to note that one of the primary forces behind the push to be, you know, enable Alaska tribes to put land into trust were concerns about public safety and concerns about, you know, and very well-founded concerns from many of our rural communities, which are tribal communities, about the lack of public safety there, the failure to fund public safety in those villages, and the, you know, the way that the current landscape is, the current legal and, you know, jurisdictional landscape is, you know, tribes are not necessarily able to protect their people in the way that they want to. And so
if they have land in trust, it essentially creates a border that then they could have some legal jurisdiction within that area?
It's certain that it would certainly be an option available to them with regard to land into trust, you know, if land was placed into trust. And I think that that option is more powerful than some of the options that have been provided, you know, in the form of like VSPO or other assistance. But, you know, so the you know, I think that, what, you know, we have our urban lands in Alaska, and we also have our rural areas. And I think that it's really important to note that, well, you know, I personally think that the, you know, issues of bodily safety are more important than a de minimis effect on a tax register, potentially for a municipality. And that is a primary reason driving the push to take land into trust. And it's unfortunate that that is now on hold, because I do think that that affects and implicates tribal sovereignty in Alaska.
So let's talk about the distinction between the prospect of putting land into trust in rural Alaska, mm-hmm. for the purposes of enhanced tribal authority when it comes to law enforcement and the advent of more federal dollars that could go to tribes for hiring village public safety officers and tribal police. So, but in the urban setting, I think that there is confusion with some people about could the ANCs have similar, the Alaska Native Corporations have similar abilities. Do they also, I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you, do they also have any sort of tribal sovereignty? Could they take their corporate offices in Anchorage and ask to have all those put into trust and take, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate out of the tax rolls?
Well, the, you know, so the short answer is no. In order to apply for, ask the Department of Interior to place land into trust, you have to be a federally recognized tribe. And Alaska Native corporations, for purposes of you know, placing land into trust, are not recognized as, they are not federally recognized tribes. You know, in fact, when the land into trust, you know, I think that both village and regional corporations support with reservation, you know, have their own opinions and concerns about the ability to place land into trust. But I don't foresee a future where a regional corporation would somehow, you know, magically turn itself into a tribe and, you know, ta-da, all of their land is now withdrawn from, you know, the state tax.
Well, if I understand it correctly, they would have to turn authority over to the tribe and no longer be in charge of that property or office building, or it would have to be a tribal piece of real estate
before they could even apply
to do something like that.
A tribe has to own the land in full. It's
right.
You know, in like I said before, in fee simple. I think it's also important to recognize, though, the different land ownership situation between village corporations and regional corporations, where you have a split surface estate. So you have village corporations owning the surface, where your regionals own the subsurface. And so, you know, when we're talking about placing land into trust, you know, it's difficult to generalize because there are so many layers here. And, you know, it is complicated in Alaska in a way that I think it's not necessarily complicated in the lower 48.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment, and you can join our conversation if you have questions or comments about what it means for tribes to put land into trust, an application process that is currently on hold by the federal government. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Mary is in Bethel. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I do have questions. I turned on my radio kind of late. But when ANCSA was passed, I was in college then, and as I understood it then and still now, ANCSA stands for Alaska Native Census Service Area. If I'm wrong, please somebody correct me. And I do remember being bothered by hasty actions of then President Nixon. Was that to me, it was hastily passed so that the Alaska pipeline could be initiated and built. And I do remember even then, a lot of my college classmates and people from the villages calling and asking what this is all about. And I also do recall lawyers pouncing in on villages to help them with this. But when, to me, what they actually were doing was that they were getting the money for themselves. And in the end, that money that was given to the Native villages, it didn't last long. Even like before 6 months were up to me, all that money was gone. Mm. But I do like what Willie Hansony and Fred and his brother and nor agreeing to re-Christians. What they did was they were trying to really explain what was going on. The tribes anywhere, even in countries and states that where the tribes are theoretically recognized, to me that's always been nominal, and to me that will always be nominal.
Well, Mary, thank you for calling in with your comments, and I want to give our guests a chance to respond here. First of all, I've never heard anyone refer to ANCSA as Alaska Native Census Survey Area. Have you heard of that before, Anna? You were smiling when she said that.
No. So thank you so much for your comments, Mary. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the historical perspective that you're bringing to the conversation, because it's, you know, I think it's important to incorporate your experiences as somebody who was, you know, involved in the conversation when ANCSA was enacted. So the way that I understand the acronym ANCSA, I understand it as meaning the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. You know, it may be that there's a Census Service Area Act out there that I'm not aware of. And I look forward to going back to my office and looking into that, because, you know, I welcome the opportunity to learn more. You know, I think some of the concerns that you raised about, you know, money and village corps is definitely, you know, that's a concern that's been expressed to me also about other, you know, by other people, you know, similar to you, who were you know, part of the conversation when ANCSA was enacted. And
I want to get Mike Wallery back in here. Mike, we were talking earlier before Mary's call from Bethel about what does self-determination, sovereignty mean. Anna had some ideas along that line. Do you agree, or do you have a different definition about what sovereignty is? And then my second question would be, how does it compare and contrast with the sovereignty that states have? I know that in the lower 48, there was a lot of fights over what were called equal footing doctrines, where states did not want tribes to have the same level of governmental authority that states had. What does sovereignty mean in your definition, Mike?
Well, I think Anna's right. It's the ability to govern your communities and to insulate yourself from exterior governance, from exterior forces, and that's the whole purpose of sovereignty and a sovereignty movement. I differ a little bit in terms of Anna's view that that we need Indian country for to protect Native communities from violence, and to provide public safety. Unfortunately, setting land into trust doesn't actually create more money for law enforcement, because those formulas, all it means is shifting money into law enforcement. The TPA, the Tribal Priority Allocation System, you're just shifting money that's currently available to tribes from one area into law enforcement, which can largely be done now. And tribes, unfortunately, do have to fill in the vacuum of the lack of law and order in the rural areas. And that has been one of their major functions in recent time. Tribes do, I think I've heard this said, that we have to have Indian country in order to govern our communities and to provide for law and order. And my experience is not that. That it really has to do with the ability of the tribe to exercise jurisdiction to protect its tribal members and to prohibit people from harming their tribal members.
And can tribes have that without land in trust status?
Yes. For example, you know, you see many tribes banishing people, and the state courts are actually honoring many of the tribal court orders if they're done properly, that are coming out. We just had one done in a village just recently to banish a a tribal a drug dealer that was coming in and harassing members in a road community. And the state will enforce that to the extent that they are able to.
Well, if
the bigger problem has to do with resources.
So if the main purpose for placing land into trust is to avoid taxation, if tribes can exercise sovereignty outside of that, then how then it makes it seem harder to defend to people who are not tribal members as to why this seems fair to communities that provide services if tribes are applying to put land into trust solely for the purpose of protecting it against taxation. How can, what would you say in defense of that?
Well, the problem of taxation is a little bit more complex than that. For example, the largest amount of Native-owned land and, you know, or a large amount of Native-owned land here in the city of Fairbanks is owned by Tanana Chiefs Conference, which is a tribal organization. It's not a tribe, but it's a tribal organization. And the vast majority of it is tax exempt, as is other charitable organizations' land. That is a policy. And just because an entity is a Native entity doesn't mean that they can't have their lands that are used for charitable purposes in a tax-exempt status. We had to actually litigate that a few years ago in a case called Dananananash versus Fairbanks North Star Borough. And this whole idea of the rural area being different than the urban area is very true. The lands that are being put into trust, I'm not criticizing a tribe wanting to do that. There's lots of reasons to do that, but it really has a minimal impact, as Anna said, on the tax base, because in most cases, those lands that are being put into trust in the urban areas would be tax exempt anyways.
All right.
For charitable purposes or under ANCSA.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, but we need to take a quick break. We will return in just a moment and continue our conversation about what it means to put land into trust status for tribes as Talk of Alaska continues.
Funding for Talk of Alaska was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation about tribal lands being taken into trust. Anna, is it known, and then Mike, I'll ask you if you have any insight into this as well, but is it known when the BIA meeting in Juneau said, the officials there said, look, there's no sense of urgency. This is going to be 6 months of consultation, another 6 months of review, and then maybe more consultation. Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes President Richard Peterson really pushed back and said, well, maybe there's no sense of urgency for you, but there is for us. We've been waiting for years for this, and now you're saying it's going to be at least another year, if not longer. What is known about what may be happening in this review, and is there any way to have any insight into how you think it's going to go? What do you think will happen with this review, Anna?
Oh, that's thank you. That's a good question. Also, somewhat of a loaded question. So I have here in front of me a Dear Tribal Leader letter that was sent out by the Department of Interior, inviting tribes and also CEOs of ANCSA corporations to consult about these changes. What sort of questions are they going to be asking tribes and Native Corps about, you know, throughout this process? They're asking essentially what we're talking about today. They want to know tribes' input and Alaska Native Corporation input on if ANCSA or if FLTMA or ANILCA, the laws that we were talking about earlier, if tribes and ANCs think that those laws affected the secretary's ability to take land into trust in Alaska. They want to know if amendments to the Indian Reorganization Act, you know, affected the secretary's ability to take land into trust in Alaska. I think it's important to note that these questions are not coming from tribes in Alaska. You know, I don't think that tribes in Alaska are advocating for these changes to the regulation. As Richard Peterson said, you know, we've been waiting for this for a long time. There's been a, there was definitely a concerted and very, you know, intentional push by tribes in Alaska to be able to put land into trust. So I think it's important to question where the motivation for these changes is coming from and to understand what might be at play behind putting these, putting the application of this regulation on hold and potentially renewing it. How long will it take? Well, the Department of Interior said 6-month review, do some consultations, maybe think about it a little bit longer. You know, they, I would note that if they, if the Department of Interior wants to revise this regulation, they're going to have to go through the public notice and comment period. That would be, as I understand it, ancillary to these tribal consultations. So I think that, you know, this could go on for a number of years.
Well, it seems like even after the review, whatever the decision is, mm-hmm. would possibly be ripe for litigation on either side about what that determination is, how the interpretation of the IRA and ANCSA and other acts may have been decided on. Mike, what are your thoughts quickly on that? And then we're going to go to the phones.
Well, I there are two things that are actually being talked about in the listening sessions through December include both the Alaska IRA itself and lands into trust in Alaska. This is kind of the absence of a policy, and it's being reviewed in light of the executive direction from President Trump to review all recent policies. And it reflects a fundamental failure of this administration to have a policy, and we've had a policy of self-determination since President Nixon. So we're in kind of, I think what this is really symbolizing is a just simply inability of the Trump administration to have a consistent, coherent, and rational policy towards Alaska Natives. And we're in a holding session while they try and figure it out.
Let's go to the phones quickly. Roy is in Utqiagvik. Hi, Roy.
Hey, good morning. Very interesting discussion in regards to how the indigenous people in Alaska could control their own destiny. And it's so obvious within the state of Alaska and what is happening with the financial situation of the state of Alaska and trying to address some of the citizens in the rural areas within the state of Alaska. And if they want us to be citizens of Alaska and per se the United States of America, then they got to do what they need to do to help us and what some of our needs are. And that's not happening in the state of Alaska because the state of Alaska is financially in a financial bad situation. And the first ones that are always impacted are the rural areas. And because of that, we're not getting the services, the requirements, especially keep the drugs and alcohol away from the rural areas. And it's like, leave them alone. It's just like what they do to the reservations down south with the federal government. Leave them alone. Let them just drink themselves to death. But our ability to use the borrow entities, like in North Slope and Nana region, where 90% of the financial resources come to the state of Alaska. And then you kind of look at that big picture. If the 90% of the state financial resources come from rural areas, then what do you want us to think? Think we should make our own state because the state of Alaska is not doing what needs to be done to the citizens of the other areas of the state of Alaska? We need to start thinking about that. And then when you start talking about lands, these are our lands that were taken away. And when you kind of think back of when America first started, they used the doctrine of discovery, which stated that lands could be taken away from indigenous people since they are not good Christians and savages. So they kind of went across the whole America, killing millions of people. But what gets me is that in the 1960s and 1970s, there was a lot of good Christian people all over the state, and how could they take their lands away? That's right, in Karavik, there's a Presbyterian church which was established in 1899.
Roy, I so appreciate your thoughts on this and the historical context that you're bringing, but we're getting close to running out of time. So thank you so much for raising these issues. I've heard before from people in the northern part of the state about maybe they should secede from Alaska and form a different state. Roy mentioned a similar line of thinking. As Mike had said earlier, the idea of land in a trust, though, does not necessarily solve those problems of rural Alaska and law enforcement and other issues, because it's just kind of shuffling federal dollars more than attracting more money. Am I characterizing that correctly, Mike?
Yes, I think Roy is actually, I think he's giving voice to a very valid opinion, and that is that the idea that people that want to do away with tribal status, Indian status, and all of that, legal status, they do that based upon the promise that Native people, particularly Native people in rural areas, will receive all the equal treatment under the law. And that's just not true. Anybody who lives in a village knows that the law enforcement services simply aren't there, and water and sewer oftentimes isn't there. And so that is a constant problem. But the bigger issues in Alaska have to do for the Native communities are not being addressed. And those are, for example, the meth opioid addiction problem is not being addressed, and it can't be solved by land into trust. And we need a policy.
Did you say it can or cannot?
It cannot. Right. And it needs to be, it would be a lot better if the Trump administration was focusing on the needs of Alaska Native people rather than trying to take something away from them. Climate change, 30 plus villages are being threatened with destruction. And we don't have a policy on that either from the federal government. We have failed villages, and we have problems with the capacity of tribes to address many of their community problems. So this lack of a policy, this kind of punting and saying, well, we want to review all this stuff and we don't want to pay any attention to the last 60 years of studies that have directed the way towards providing safe communities through self-determination is being ignored.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I think that we'll revisit this at some point in the future. Thanks to my guests, Anna Crary and Mike Wallery from KUAC in Fairbanks. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium featured open positions include CMAs and LPNs for their primary care clinics in Southeast Alaska. Come work for Search and contribute to your community. Enjoy full benefits, paid time off, and retirement savings. Search is looking for someone like you. For more information, visit search.org/jobs. That's SEARHC.org/jobs to apply. This message is sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.